FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. It's Carrie Lutz, and it's that special time of the month. Actually, it's a little earlier than that, but travel plans, holiday, and all that. And it's time for Mickey Fulp's monthly major market review. Mickey, you're taking off early, so we had to get this in, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. Going on a road trip starting on Labor Day. In the Hot Rod Lincoln, so looking forward to that.
Yeah, well, hopefully you won't be doing too much drinking in the Hot Rod Lincoln, but hey, you got a lot to celebrate here. The markets, they just keep making new highs, like it's going out of style.
Well, the major markets do, and I had a good month. I made some money this month, took some profits in the junior sector, and we had a biotech company that's tripled in the last month, so it's been a good month for my portfolio and a lot of people's portfolio. The Dow and the S&P 500 both establishing all-time highs once again. Dow closed the month up to over 3% at almost 17,100, pushing the all-time high. S&P 500 has been flirting with 2,000 for the entire month, and it's the lack of volatility lately in that index is quite amazing. It just kind of bounces around 2,000. NASDAQ, big winner, up 5%, now at 4580. Russell 2000 essentially gained back what it lost last month to close 1174. That's still very close to an all-time high. TSX established an all-time high, up 2% of the month, closed at 15,600 and change. And as I mentioned, it was a good month for the Venture Exchange. The index was up on a two-week uptick here, two-week rally, up 2%. Now, that's not a lot, but it's very specific stocks that have run. So if you're playing those stocks, had a very nice month. It looks to me, I mean, this is quite unusual, I think, for the Venture Exchange. I think we're getting a little bit of front running of smart money pre Labor Day. So, you know, everybody comes back to work. All money managers come back to work next Tuesday. And so we certainly expect the markets to continue, at least the venture capital markets, to continue on the uptick here.
Yeah, and
oh, and I forgot.
Right.
Finally, the emerging market index, it's at a high since we've been tracking it, and we started doing this in January 2012.
And stocks are definitely the place to be. I mean, that's where all of the world's liquidity is heading, and no wonder they're going up. A couple other markets did pretty well, but let's take a look at the currencies now. The dollar is king.
Dollar is king. Same old, same old. It's at the monthly close with all-time high since we've been tracking for 2.5+ years, closed at 82.74. That's pretty strong dollar, up 1.6%. You know, for currencies, that's a pretty big move on a monthly basis. Conversely, of course, then the euro is at a 14-month low at $1.31.
Yeah.
The next one, this is not pretty. If you're playing, if you're shorting the bond market, my God, the 10-year treasury was down almost 9%. Interest rate 2.35, that's the low since May of 2013. You know, it's you would have thought with the Fed weaning us month by month from quantitative easing that the interest rate would go up, and it's gone down. So tell me why, I don't know. We'll let the smart money managers, the macroeconomists give us some insight on that. Perhaps we'll delve into that next month. And finally, in terms of money, I don't know if you call it money or not, cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, gained back its normality, which is volatility. It was down 13% over the month, closed a little bit above $500.
And I should interject here. I bought my first Bitcoin. I got two wallets, one from Coinbase, another from Blockchain. Coinbase, you might as well just tell them everything about you, because you tell them your bank account, your credit card, where your firstborn is residing. And Blockchain's a bit different. I bought about $100 worth when it was under $500. A listener out there, hat tip to Aaron. He was kind enough to send me $5 worth of Bitcoin. And I've now got about $135 worth of Bitcoin, because it went up a little bit in value. I'm just experimenting with it. We're going to do a podcast about it. And it's actually pretty cool the way it works, Mickey. I'll show you the next time I see you. It's pretty neat the way it verifies the transaction incredibly quickly. It's just a neat thing. Where it's going?
Okay, I'm not convinced, Gary. You'll have to convince me, but I will.
I don't know if I can convince you or not, but it just is neat.
Well, you know, I've got to always approach these things with an open mind. I have not closed my mind completely on cryptocurrencies, but I just don't quite get it. I'd rather own gold and platinum and a little bit of silver.
Same here. I feel similar about it. And speaking of precious metals, interesting month for the PM sector, too.
Well, it was. You know, there was not very much volatility. There was some moves in the gold market. It had a monthly low of 1276, a monthly high of 1313. But it kind of feels like, to me, like we've seen this movie before. You know, we've seen this range-bound gold price for, God, how long has it been now? It's varied somewhere between the high 1200s and the low 1300s. It just seems like it's directionless. And it closed about the same. Closed last month at 1285, closed, about an hour ago at 1286. So who knows? Silver did not track gold at all over the month. It was on the downtick all month, lost 6%. You know, I'm not a silver bug, but you know, that crazy silver summit's coming soon to Spokane. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you've been there at least
a couple times.
Once or twice. So this is going to send the silver bugs. It's going to give them something to talk about. You know, and I'm sure the story's going to be about the manipulation of the silver market. I don't quite buy it. But, anyway, silver being down gives the silver bug something to talk about here. I think the silver summit is, when is it? A month? Is it in October?
October, I think it is. So, yeah.
Platinum was down 3% over the month. That would make a lot of sense to me. Especially with palladium up 2%. It closed, the COMEX in New York closed, about an hour ago, and it closed at 898. But then immediately the Globex market opens, and we saw this crazy little spike. We saw right at New York close, we saw it go down. As soon as Globex opened, it spikes back up. As I'm looking right now on KCAST, I got a 902 bid and a 908 ask, so that's 905. Carrie, that's a 13-year high for palladium. The last time we saw that was when Ford was hoarding palladium because they thought the Russians were going to cut us off. So anyway, it makes me happy. I bought platinum last month. I would like to own some palladium, but I'll be damned if I'm going to buy it at this price.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy the way it's been going, and it just keeps going up.
Yeah, I'm looking at our spreadsheet here. Been on the uptick since the end of January, and I'm doing the math on my head. It looks to me like it is now up something on the order of 20%, 22% over the year. That's amazing. That's an amazing run.
Yeah, and platinum hasn't really tracked it. Platinum's been strong, but palladium in the metals group has been the runaway winner.
Yeah, and you know, it all has to do with the automobile and the fact that palladium is mainly used for gasoline engine catalytic converters, as opposed to platinum, which is mainly used in diesel engines.
Correct. Hey, and what about these ratios? We got our gold to silver back to 66, and things happen when that ratio gets that high, don't they?
Well, they certainly do. I'm looking at our spreadsheet here, and that looks like an all-time high since we've been tracking since January 2012. That's getting up there. At some point, it's going to trigger a silver buy for me. Probably my target is 70 to 72, and at that point, I'll probably buy some silver. Platinum gold ratio, still about the same, 1.11. Platinum to palladium, once again,
down.
Just tracking lower and lower. The last, I'm looking right here, and it looks like a year ago, it was over 2. And it closed this month at 1.6. And also for the first time this year, it takes more than 13 barrels of oil to buy an ounce of gold, 13.6. And finally, for the metals, copper lost about 1% over the month. That gives back exactly the gain it had last month. It's been a bit of a lackluster copper market since we had the rally that wiped out the March correction, and that occurred, that rally occurred in, looking at it, in May, I guess. So, bit of a lackluster copper market over the summer.
Yep, and yeah, just got to wonder about the world economy when you see copper just floating about listlessly, and then we'll get into energy, which also makes one think. So looking at energy,
what a crazy 2 months we've seen.
Yeah.
You know, with all this geopolitical unrest in the Middle East and Russia and Ukraine, you know, it's just curious that the unrest, the geopolitical scenarios that are going on right now are in important oil producing and transport parts of the world. And and WTI gave off another 5%. It's down 10% over the last 2 months. Brent is way down, too. It's lost 8% over the last 2 months. You and I, for people interested, I'm going to promote a little bit what we did a couple of weeks ago. And we did an entire show, probably a close to 25, 30-minute show devoted strictly to the oil and gas market, really focused on the oil markets. And last time we talked on this show, I was at a loss to explain why oil was going down when gasoline was going down. You remarked about that. And, you know, doing a little research, it's pretty much recognized that the big banks have moved out. They've closed their commodity desks. So,
yeah.
Three big U.S. banks have moved out of commodities, U.S.-London banks, if you will. And so you've removed that speculation from the market with those big commodity desks closing. And so the idea is that there is less big bank, big commercial shorts and longs to play in the futures and options market. You know, we also came up with a figure that about 4% of the world's oil right now has been taken out of the market for all this geopolitical unrest. So imagine where oil prices would be right now if we didn't have supply disruptions. A bit scary.
And all those shorts in oil provide liquidity, theoretically. So right now, they'd be driving the price higher, but yep. later on, they'd be driving it lower. At least that's the theory.
Yeah, you know, so I mean, the commodities markets are the most speculative in the world, and, you know, and I embrace that. You know, it makes it fun to go to work every day when you see things bouncing up and down. And so the worst thing in the world for people like me is are flat markets, because it generates no interest.
Yeah. And hey, look, we need a high oil price in today's world. I just sent you an article about the cost of drilling and the fact that the world's oil companies are taking on record amounts of debt to get at this oil. So we need these high prices, whether you like it or not. I know you like it and I do, but we've got to have high prices, because that's the only thing that's going to enable us to get the supply that you need to keep your lights on, to keep your car going. And if you don't want the high prices, then that's fine. Prepare to have cold winters and prepare to not go as many places as you like going, right?
Prepare for a lackluster economy.
Yeah, we got to have it.
Got a pretty good economy right now. Maybe if you're a blue collar worker and got laid off from a factory someplace, but you know, it's pretty good economy we're living in right now, and we've become accustomed to $100 oil. The business has been accustomed to that. Everything is perking light right along with $100 oil. And if we have a big crash in oil prices, it's going to slow down the economy for sure, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. It'll feel good when it's happening, but in the long run, it's going to be the worst thing for the economy. And we've seen it before, and, you know, it's not a good
thing. Well, who does it feel good?
Well, it feels good when you're...
You pull up to the gas pump, and you're not paying $4, you're paying $3.80. Does that feel good, Kerry?
I don't
pay attention to gasoline prices. I just go up and fill up my gas hogs. You know, it's a cost of doing business.
I'm not so much talking for you and I. I mean, I own oil stocks, and I'm happy when they're doing well. But for Joe Sixpack, you know, who's got a Ford F-350 pickup truck, you know, that cost him $100 to fill it up, Mickey. You know,
well, it cost me $100 to fill up my vehicles. But my point would be that if Joe Sixpack's driving an F-350 that the bank owns, and he's worried about a gas price that's $3.70 versus $4, then he probably ought to sell his friggin' F-350. Actually, he probably owes more for it than he can sell it for.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And, you know, I mean, ass backwards idea to do that anyway. So,
Mickey, nobody ever said that Joe Sixpack understood economics. If he understood economics, he wouldn't be Joe Sixpack in the first place. But anyways, this is what we're faced with here, and a little bit of current relief isn't really going to help things. A heck of
I hope you're not going to tell me these finest groceries are with an EBT card too. So,
of course he is, Mickey. You know that.
Henry Hub
is up
above $4. I think that can directly be attributed to some hot weather in the month of August. You know, I'm headed towards St. Louis on the road trip. It'll take me probably a week or eight days to get there on this road trip, but St. Louis hit 100 degrees 2 days ago with the requisite 80% humidity. So I would think that that's what happened to Henry Hub. It was up 7.5% over the month. But the big winner, Kerry, and we kind of figured this was going to come. We didn't know quite when, but the big winner was uranium, up 12% over the month, closed at 32. But the interesting thing is it closed yesterday at 33.25, which would have been a 16% gain for the month. There's very good reasons for this. Japanese are moving slowly but surely toward restarts of some reactors. We have the sanctions on Russia, and Russia is a very big player in the world uranium market. In fact, people probably don't know, but the biggest uranium producer in the United States is Uranium One, and that's a private Russian-owned company.
Correct.
And finally, early in the week, Cameco went out on strike in the Athabasca Basin, which results in severe supply disruption. We look for bigger and better things from uranium, and I got to give props to Dennis Higgs, the chairman of the board of Uraners. That's a company, a uranium producer in Wyoming that I own shares of, and Dennis is so kind to send me the daily uranium price. You know, it used to be we were in a vacuum with uranium. We get a price once a week. Now we get it every day at market close, and it's just wonderful. Our ratios, Brent to WTI, still 1.08. That's pretty normal. And we actually saw WTI to Henry Hub go down for the month, close at 23.5.
Hey, and you know what? There's probably more to come for uranium as well. Because look at where it was, and look at where it is now, right?
Well, yeah, and realize that spot price is only maybe 20 to 25% of the total uranium traded or contracted, let's say, every year. But the market really pays attention to the spot price, and no one in the world, I will challenge anybody that can show me they can make money at $28 uranium, which it was for most of the summer. You just can't do that. Even they can't even do it with ISR projects in Kazakhstan. And in terms of a cash cost basis, yes, you could, can, but by the time you add in your CapEx and depreciation, amortization, and depletion, et cetera, you're all in the cost of your debt, your all-in costs. No one can make money at $28 uranium, so something had to give, and it has.
And it will continue in all likelihood, but over a period of time. Because, look, it's been a long time getting to $28, right?
Yeah, well, we mucked around there, it seemed, for all the summer. So that was a psychological boost to the market, no doubt.
No doubt. And on that note, Mickey, just tell us where we find your work, how we connect with you on the web.
MercenaryGeologist.com. This interview, of course, will be reproduced in its entirety on our 24/7 streaming audio, MercenaryGeologist.fm. And I would encourage everybody to join 37,500 Twitter followers at Mercenary Geo. We've been having fun lately. We do a lot on geologic hazards and catastrophes, and we got earthquakes going on all over the world. We got volcanoes blowing in Iceland and think Indonesia today.
I didn't hear that.
So we've got lots of stuff going on in the realm of geological catastrophes. So Papua New Guinea, the Verver volcano erupted, flights disrupted. We got a beautiful photo up on the Twitter page right now of this volcano looking out over a palm tree in the Southwest Pacific, and a big plume of mushroom-shaped plume of ash and smoke and fire coming out of the volcano.
That's pretty cool. And we had the largest quake in 20 years hit California just the past week. 6.0 hit Napa. So. Yep. Hey, no shortage of natural disasters hitting the world. It seems like it's speeding up a bit. And, hey, go go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com, sign up for the newsletter, and we've been aggregating articles from all over the place at ever-increasing rates as well. So that ought to hold us till next month, Mickey, and we will talk to you then. Have a great road trip, and see the USA in your Chevrolet.
No, it's a High Rod Lincoln.
All right. Well, hey, enjoy, and we'll talk to you next month.
All right. Thanks a lot, Kerry.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.